And I was facilitating a debt summit last October, and from that summit, it's clear that South Africa's debt distress industry is one of the few industries that is booming at the moment. Some 16,000 South Africans signing up each month for debt review that's allowed under the National Credit Act. And whether this is a good or a bad thing, I suppose, depends really on which side of the ledger that you sit on. But the number of borrowers in distress is alarming. It's grown some 61% since the National Credit Act became law back in 2007, while the number of credit active consumers has grown around 44% to more than 24 million South Africans. And that's according to figures from the National Credit Regulator's Credit Bureau Monitor, which is very interesting if you actually consider how many South Africans are employed. Obviously, people with multiple accounts out there. Now, though the debt counselling industry and debt counsellors have no shortage of customers, government is clearly concerned about the stubbornly high level of debt delinquency in the country. There's roughly 10 million people out there behind on their bills. That's over 90 days late. And with an election looming, it's no surprise that government is opting for some form of a debt relief program in the not-too-distant future. Well, to talk about this, I'm joined now by Eugene Bester, Director in the Dispute Resolution Practice, and Luanne Chance, a Senior Associate, also with Cliff Dekker-Hoffmeyer. Welcome to the show, guys. Eugene, just kick us off. For a long time, South Africans have been warned that the level of personal debt in the country is really out of control. We love to borrow. And I suppose it depends on which side of the ledger you sit on, as I said. Various parties have been working closely with the Portfolio Committee for over a year regarding this draft bill that we now have. Just give us the background to the National Credit Amendment Bill.
Good afternoon, Michael, and good afternoon to your listeners. Yes, so the Portfolio Committee has been busy for well over a year now on amendment to the National Credit Act. And in towards the end of January, beginning of February, they had their public hearings that took place in Parliament. A large number of role players were there, the Consumer Goods Council, the Black Sash, Banking Association South Africa, the National Clothing Retail Association. So there's a lot of role players that are very interested in this draft bill. And from both sides, there are people that are supporting, or the institutions that are supporting, the efforts to alleviate debt, and there are people that will be affected if the bill is actually promulgated in due course. But the figures that we mentioned, it's, as you say, it's a worrying, it's a huge problem. A lot of people are seriously over-indebted.
It's always in the detail, though, that we need to focus and also be careful, because there are unintended consequences for every policy action that that's taken by government. Just talk me through the debt intervention powers that are being proposed by the bill.
Okay, so in essence, there are two different debt intervention mechanisms. The first is for a category of people earning less than 7,500, who have less than 50,000 rand in unsecured credit agreements, and the cut-off date is the 24th of November 2017. That application will follow a procedure through the National Credit Regulator, through the National Credit Tribunal, and if certain requirements are met by the applicant, then that applicant's debt will be extinguished. It provides for an extinguishment of the entire debt or a portion of the debt, and also if that applicant has credit agreements with various financial institutions or credit providers, then those credit providers will be equally affected by the debt intervention.
In other words, those credit providers would have to write the debt off?
They will have to write the debt off. The debt will be extinguished, and you know that is... So at the public hearings, one of the issues raised was whether such an intervention will pass a constitutional challenge. And that's going to be the interesting development of this bill going forward.
What are the constitutional issues at play here? Because obviously the law of contract is fundamental to the rule of law, and while it's clearly acknowledged that there's been some, shall we say, reckless lending in the market, lenders lending to applicants who were way overextended and shouldn't have been taking up credit in the first place. But that said, we can't just go about expunging credit records and expect it not to have an impact on the cost of credit going forward, because that really raises the risks for the lender.
That's exactly the problem. So Section 25 of the Constitution prevents arbitrary deprivation of property. An answer has been provided to National Treasury to say that this debt intervention is a deprivation of property. There's no question about that. A bank or financial institution has a right to collect its debts. That debt will be written off, so that is definitely a deprivation. The debate is around whether that deprivation is arbitrary or not, and that's going to be a very interesting debate going forward.
Because on the one side, the argument could be made that it's targeted and not arbitrary. And in this instance, I'm assuming here the arguments would be made that it's targeted at predatory lenders. What is the sort of argument that you've heard during the parliamentary hearings to justify this?
Very interesting debates were had. You know, the one specific institute or the one specific association was the Retail Association. And they explained the process that a person's first account that they get is basically an Edgar's account or a Fashimi's account, very small credit. They pay off that debt and then they start building up a credit record. From there, they move on to bigger credit agreements. And the one member of parliament laid the blame squarely on the first line of people that grant credit to these to this class of people that will be affected by the bill. So it is very difficult. There is no question about it that people are over indebted, they have overextended themselves. Whether there's reckless credit by credit providers, whether it's just not managing your affairs in the best possible way, that has caused the over indebtedness.
And surely
the problem that has to be addressed.
And surely the onus of proof has to rest on whoever is trying to justify what could be tantamount to an arbitrary deprivation of property, that the credit was extended recklessly. In other words, that the checks weren't done, that the right questions weren't asked, and that the consumers. Household balance sheet wasn't properly assessed. That said, consumers, and I know of people who do this, do tend to hide key information from a credit provider when they're applying for that second or third or even fourth account.
That's exactly what happens. And this bill also provides for if a credit provider assesses a client for a new loan, if the second credit provider feels that the first credit provider has granted credit recklessly, the second credit provider can refer the first credit provider to the tribunal for reckless credit. So the industry called it the snitch clause, basically snitching on the person in front. If you believe that the previous credit that was granted was reckless. Now the difficulty with that is the second credit provider doesn't have insight into the documentation that was provided to the first credit provider.
Mm.
So whether there was concealment, the second credit provider is not going to know. But if it feels that there was reckless credit, it has an obligation to report such reckless credit. I think there's a lot of more problems that have arisen from this bill. And it's going to be a while, I believe, to a very robust procedure before the bill is enacted.
And excuse the cynic in me, but you know, if I was a competing credit provider, there's an opportunity here to report a competitor's agreements to the National Credit Regulator, and who knows, maybe reducing competition by restricting that competitor's ability to efficiently grant credit.
that is an unintended consequence, but it's a very real consequence. In the most recent report that came out from the portfolio committee meeting, the senior state advisors, actually, the parliamentary law advisors, actually suggested that that reporting function or obligation on the second credit provider falls away, and that they leave it up to debt counsellors or someone else to report the so-called reckless credit. But there's a lot of debating that is still going to take place regarding this bill, and we'll just have to wait and see what the final outcome is.
So in terms of timeline, what are we looking at from here? And this is an important question, for we have a general election coming up next year, and one might rather cynically view this as pandering to the masses.
Michael, that is a real concern. And another interesting outcome of the latest meeting of the portfolio committee. So the current bill, there's a cut-off date being the 24th of November 2017. So it impacts on credit agreements that were concluded prior to that date. Now, the advice that Treasury has received is that when you have a deprivation of existing rights, in other words, rights prior to 24 November, the arbitrary nature of that deprivation is stronger. So what the proposal is that this bill should not affect credit agreements that have been concluded prior to 24 November, that it should only impact on new credit agreements that come into force after the bill has been, or after the act has been promulgated. So this automatically has a further issue that arises. Is that going to impact on the bankability, to use a colloquial phrase,
yeah,
of people that fall in this category? And you're right, the general election is next year. If this bill is only going to impact on credit agreements that are entered into post the enactment of the bill or of the statute, who knows what effect it will have prior to the election?
And as we know, I mean, it's that category, and I don't think we mentioned it specifically, but I see it's those of debts not in excess of 50,000 Rand and earning lower than 7,000 Rand a month that we talk about when we talk about increasing access to financial services, financial inclusion, as it's bandied about in financial circles. So there's a very large baby that could be thrown out with the bathwater here. Eugene, that's all the time we have for certain that this is not going anywhere. That was Eugene Bester, Director in the Dispute Resolution Practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, with the law feature here on Classic Business, only on Classic 102.7.